Well, just by show of hands, how many of you are following the crisis in Yemen? I just want to be curious, how many are following this crisis in Yemen? They're saying that what's going on in Yemen right now may be the worst humanitarian crisis in the last 100 years. This eastern part of the Middle East, in the southern part of the area, has been in war for the last 4 years, in this intense civil war. And over the last 4 years, they've estimated that 85,000 children have died due to starvation over the last 4 years. I was reading an article last night, and they said that 10 million people right now don't know where their next meal is going to come from. And so 10 million people are on the brink of starvation. It is an absolute massive crisis. We see crisis, we see civil war, we see conflict all over the world. I mean, we could go to many other places besides Yemen being one of the worst in the world right now, but we could go to Syria or Libya or Venezuela or Iraq or Ukraine or South Sudan or Nigeria or Somalia or Democratic Republic of Congo or Afghanistan. And we could go on and on all over the world. Conflict, war, disaster. Last week we started a series called Peace on Earth. And as we started this series on peace on earth, we looked at the diversity of the world. We said out of the whole world, there are 195 nations. And all over the whole world, there are 6,500 spoken languages. And people all over the world from 195 countries, from 6,500 spoken languages, are all desiring peace. And the way most people are pursuing peace is by religion. We said there are 4,200 religions around the world. And the religions have a common premise that you actually attain peace by working on yourself and by self-improvement and by trusting in the principles of working out this religious system, whatever it is. And we said that Jesus didn't come to bring another religion. Actually, Jesus came to free us from religion. Because peace doesn't come by following a religious system. Peace comes by following a person, and that is Jesus Christ. And we said that every person is longing for some level of peace. And as we watched that second video just a few moments ago, people asking the question, is peace possible? And there's mixed reviews. I mean, if you were asked, is peace on earth possible, what would you say? The Advent season is waiting and preparing and believing that peace is possible. And that this is what the birth of Jesus is about. This is what Jesus is coming and the future to bring about peace to the whole world. Jesus came to bring peace in Yemen, in Ukraine, in Romania, in Japan, in Mexico, in Venezuela, and here as well. But conflict and war have been in existence since Adam and Eve fell in the Garden of Eden. All throughout human history, we see war and conflict and even civil war. Brokenness coming out of the beauty that God intended. And as we think about this Advent season of preparation, and as we think about even this passage that we just read from the book of Zephaniah, there was a context going on even when that book was written about civil war and about brokenness even back then. In fact, let's read that passage. If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to the book of Zephaniah. And let me give you just a little bit of context of what was actually taking place in the book of Zephaniah. There are 39 books of the Old Testament, and they're organized in different ways. And so you have the law, which is the first five books of the Old Testament. You have the historical books. You have the poetic books. You have the minor prophets, the major prophets. And you see Zephaniah right there amidst the minor prophets. Many people have never even heard of the book of the Bible called Zephaniah. We see the nation of Israel, back when Zephaniah was written, the nation of Israel was made up of 12 tribes. And the first king of the nation of Israel was a man named Saul. The second king of Israel was a man named David. And then David's son Solomon was the third king of the nation of Israel. And when Solomon was passing away, his son Rehoboam and another associate in Solomon's regime went to war against each other, and civil war broke out in the nation of Israel. And the nation actually divided with that civil war between the north and the south. And 10 of the 12 tribes remained in the north, and 2 of the 12 tribes remained in the south. And this civil war created this schism and division that actually formed two different countries. God's people were divided. And the northern nation, made up of the 10 tribes, turned away from God from the very beginning. And God brought judgment upon that northern nation from the very beginning. The southern nation had seasons where they were following God, and then seasons where they weren't following God. And Zephaniah, this minor prophet, came during this time of the southern kingdom, a time when they had turned their hearts away from God. And so actually the book of Zephaniah was a form of warning. Zephaniah the prophet was warning them that if they continue to turn away from God, that destruction and judgment would come upon them. And so as we read in the Advent reading just a little bit ago, that the second half of Zephaniah, which is the second half of chapter 3, which is an encouraging part of the prophetic book there, the first half of chapter 3 actually has a lot of warnings and judgments. And so for us to understand the good news of that peace is coming, that forgiveness is coming, that mercy is coming, we only understand mercy within the context of judgment. Mercy is understood, grace is understood within the context of God's overall character of holiness. And his character of holiness means that sin is judged and destruction comes upon those who turn away from God. And the challenge that we face is that every single person has turned away from God. And so against the backdrop of God's holiness and judgment, we get a glimpse and we begin to understand mercy. That God shows mercy to those who turn their hearts to him. And this is what Zephaniah is saying in his day. And so let's read the first half of chapter 3 before we read the second half of chapter 3. And the first half is the warning. Let's read beginning at verse 1. It says, "Woe to the city of oppressors, rebellious and defiled. She obeys no one. She accepts no correction. She does not trust in the Lord. She does not draw near to her God. Her officials within her are roaring lions. Her rulers are evening wolves who leave nothing for the morning. Her prophets are unprincipled. They are treacherous people. Her priests profane the sanctuary and do violence to the law. The Lord within her is righteous. He does no wrong. Morning by morning, he dispenses his justice, and every new day he does not fail. Yet the unrighteous know no shame. I have destroyed nations. Their strongholds are demolished. I have left their streets deserted, with no one passing through. Their cities are laid waste. They are deserted and empty. Of Jerusalem, I thought, surely you will fear me and accept correction. Then her place of refuge would not be destroyed, nor all my punishments come upon her. But they were still eager to act corruptly, as all they did and all they did. Therefore, wait for me, declares the Lord. For the day I will stand up to testify. I have decided to assemble the nations, to gather the kingdoms, and note, to pour out my wrath on them, all my fierce anger. The whole world will be consumed by the fire of my jealous anger. Now look, let's be clear. Now, in the church, we don't often talk about God's judgment. We talk a lot about his love and his mercy and his grace. But here's the thing I want us to make sure that we understand this morning. We cannot fully understand his mercy and his grace unless we understand it against the backdrop of his judgment and his holiness. And this is what Zephaniah is getting at. And this message that Zephaniah is giving is not just for that time period. It's for every single time period. Because as people turn away from God, the promise is this: judgment day is coming. It's a message that's not just relevant for those in the Old Testament. It's not just relevant for those back in the New Testament. It's relevant today in the 21st century, because God's character does not change. He is a holy God, and sin does not go unpunished. And this is true for people and nations all over the world. And as we understand his holiness and his judgment, and that we have in fact turned away, at that point do we understand and cry out for his mercy. Lord, please save me. I know what I deserve. I know what we deserve. But I'm asking for your grace. I need your mercy. And the only way we understand our mercy is to understand his judgment against sin. Those who say peace in this world is not possible, I think they're accurate. I think they're correct. Peace is not possible. If what they mean by peace is this idea of everyone coming together and simply loving one another more and being unified. Because here's the thing. If that were true, if we could just love one another more, if we could just be unified together, put away our differences, whatever they are, if we could just come together and love one another more, there would not be the need for the Christmas story of Jesus coming to the earth. There would not be a need for the Easter story of Jesus going to the cross. It's because we can't do that. Peace doesn't come by all of us just loving one another more in the world. Peace comes by surrender to Jesus, crying out for his mercy, and then we become unified together under the person of Jesus Christ. That's where mercy and peace come from. If we don't know, or if we don't believe something's broken, we have no motivation to want to fix it. And if we don't understand our own brokenness, and understand the judgment of God against sin, there is absolutely no motivation to surrender our lives, to plead out for his mercy, and begin to follow him. Faith in Jesus crying out for his mercy makes sense within the backdrop that we've turned away and judgment's coming. And as we read through the Bible, we read about not only his mercy, but we read throughout the Bible about his judgment. And we have to be understanding and communicating both, because both go together. His mercy is because it's undeserved. And we don't understand what's undeserved unless we understand what's deserved. And based on our turning away from God, we deserve judgment and punishment. Jesus was born into this world not to bring judgment. He didn't come to bring judgment. Judgment was already there. He came to bring deliverance from judgment. He came to bring mercy. And when we're willing to surrender our heart and our mind in faith to Jesus, that is when we receive, and it's the only way we receive peace, both in this life and ultimately in the life to come. And so Zephaniah, giving the warning in the first half of what we know as chapter 3, and then we understand now the good news. Against the backdrop of the warning, we understand the second half of chapter 3, which says this: "Then I'll purify the lips of the peoples, that all of them may call on the name of the Lord and serve him shoulder to shoulder." Then there's going to be peace. Then there's going to be unity, because people are surrendering their hearts to Jesus, not following a religion, not just trying to love one another more. That doesn't bring unity. It comes through surrender. "From beyond the rivers of Cush, my worshipers, my scattered people will bring me offerings. On that day, Jerusalem, you will not be put to shame for all the wrongs you've done to me, because I'll remove you from your arrogant boasters. Never again will you be haughty on my holy hill. But I will leave within you the meek and the humble. The remnant of Israel will trust in the name of the Lord. They will do no wrong. They will tell no lies. A deceitful tongue will not be found in their mouths. They will eat and lie down, and no one will make them afraid. Sing, daughter Zion, shout aloud, Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all your heart, daughter Jerusalem. The Lord has taken away your punishment. He's turned back your enemy. The Lord, the King of Israel, is with you. Never again will you fear any harm." These are amazing promises. "On that day, they will say to Jerusalem, 'Do not fear, Zion. Do not let your hands hang limp. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He'll take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you." And I love this part. "But will rejoice over you with singing." Can you imagine this? "He will rejoice over you with singing. I will remove from you all who mourn over the loss of your appointed festivals, which is a burden and reproach for you. At that time, I will deal with all who oppressed you. I will rescue the lame. I'll gather the exiles. I'll give them praise and honor in every land where they have suffered shame. At that time, I will gather you. At that time, I'll bring you home. I'll give you honor and praise among all the peoples of the earth when I restore your fortunes before your very eyes, says the Lord." Amazing promises. And the amazing aspect of these promises, of his mercy, his compassion, his love, is against the backdrop that God's a holy God and he will hold everyone accountable who turn away from him. And judgment day is coming all over the world. You see, God had a remnant of people back then, a small group of people who believed and didn't turn to their sinful ways. And then he was calling others to turn back to the Lord. A day is coming when people of all 195 countries in the world, a day coming when people from all 4,000 or all 6,500 languages of the earth will be unified together and worship the true and living God under the banner of his grace, mercy, and peace. And it will come because people have surrendered their hearts and their lives to Jesus. And so it was back in the day when Jesus was born, against the backdrop of God's holiness and judgment of sin, that Jesus was born to bring good news. And it says this in Matthew chapter 1, verses 20 and 21. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." Let's make crystal clear that we understand judgment day is coming. It's not a message just for the people in the Old Testament or the New Testament. It's a message for today. Judgment day is coming, but there is the offer of forgiveness and mercy and grace. And the offer is made to every single person. And the way we receive that offer is by surrender and faith. And there are remnants, and there are people, there are followers of Jesus in all 195 countries of the world right now who are waiting, who are anticipating, who are longing. In some countries, the percentage of the population of followers of Jesus is very low. In other countries, it's higher. But people all over the world right now are preparing for the celebration of Jesus' birth and are crying out for peace, understanding that peace isn't going to come through a religion. Peace comes through the person of Jesus, and they are trusting and trusting and waiting. And peace is coming for every follower of Jesus here today. And so for believers in Yemen, believers in Japan, in China, in South America, in Europe, here in North America, and in every corner of the earth, we wait, we prepare, we anticipate the celebration of Jesus' birth. We await in the midst of the backdrop of judgment coming, of God's holy character, we cry out for mercy. We need his mercy. Apart from his mercy, there is nothing. So even when we take communion, we'll take the communion in a few moments. Communion is like visibly and tangibly receiving and remembering. It's his mercy. This is what Jesus has done for us. He's made a way, and he's the way, the truth, and the life. Are you ready? Are you prepared? The Bible says that the way you make yourself ready is by, one, acknowledging your own sin and the punishment of sin. And as you acknowledge what actually is due to the ways in which you've turned away from God, you believe in your heart that Jesus has come and has died for you to make a way. And you confess with your mouth that you believe and that Jesus is Lord. And it's by that declaration of faith in our hearts and by our mouths that we receive his mercy and we have peace. Let's bow together. Would you be willing today to surrender your heart and life to Jesus? That you actually do believe that your sin deserves judgment, and that you're willing to acknowledge that no religion or human striving toward change will be enough. Do you believe that? And do you believe in your heart that Jesus has come to the world as a way of bringing forgiveness and peace and deliverance? and by believing that Jesus is the Son of God and that he was born in the world and then died on the cross for your sin, believing in your heart, are you willing to believe today and then confess with your mouth, yes, I believe Jesus is Lord? Maybe today's the day of your salvation. You can do that right now. In fact, I'm going to invite you. We're just going to, just in the quietness of our own hearts, today may be the day that you surrender your life to Jesus. Let me give you an opportunity. You just communicate to God on your own, just in your own way, just acknowledging and confessing your sin and saying you're sorry for turning away from him in so many ways and that you need his mercy and that you believe in Jesus today. Today could be the day that you receive peace in your salvation. Let me give you an opportunity just to do that. And as Barbie comes up, if today is the day that you surrender your life to Jesus, I'm going to be over there toward the back of the room, and I want to invite you to come up to me during the response time and let me know. I'd love to know that news. That's the greatest news in the world. I want to invite you to do that.